you have an open opportunity to participate in the governance, to delegate, to vote. You basically can be this perfect Polkadot citizen in terms of like you stake the DOT tokens, which means that you increasing the safety of the whole network.
Yeah, yeah.
But also you deciding the fate of the network in the governance, right?
Right, right.
So this is like, it's the best what you can do for the network, right?
It's beautiful. I love it.
It's beautiful, right? Yeah. You can literally...
Yeah, we'll get some beers.
Big ones,
yeah.
The last team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space Monkeys blasting off with Anton and Limo from Nova Sama Technologies. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
So people know or may not know, but Nova Sama Technologies makes a fantastic mobile wallet for the Polkadot ecosystem. Recently, you guys released a new feature allowing anybody to easily stake.
Yeah.
With how many taps?
Just one tap. Basically,
one
you
tap.
Enter the amount and then here you go.
And what were the challenges of allowing one tap staking for... How many chains is this available?
It's about 10 tokens that you can stake. It's really interesting if you take a look on the history, how we developed the staking solution for the Nova. And we go back to the PolkaJS time, like 2019, when the PolkaJS was the only one up that allowed you to stake the Polkadot token, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
The Kusama tokens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, there was a lot of questions from the people because they were super interested in the Polkadot and Kusama, but they had no idea how to stake. And there were some articles on the Wikipedia, like on all the stuff, like videos, amazing videos by Bill Laboon, right? How to use the PolkaJS and stuff. But the issue was that people don't see those videos. They want to stake, right? They want to earn some tokens.
Yeah.
And they need a user-friendly way to do so, straightforward way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were some challenges that we decided to address at first. And one of them was to, like, for start staking, you have to select the validators, right? Back in those days, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We could take this really complex way of selecting and understanding who are the validators, how to choose them, by basically applying the metrics. So we could select, let's say, the best performant validators, the most reliable, right? Those with identity, so that if anything happens, user can see the identity and contact the validator. But there was not a lot of diversity in the validators, right? So you could see the entities running like 80 validators or like 100 something validators, right? And we didn't want that our algorithm will select 16 validators from the same company because it's against decentralization. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we decided to also emphasize on the, like, adding this constraint that only two validators from one entity will be added to the recommended validators.
Okay.
So all of this basically resulted also in the super simple interface back in like 2019. Which allowed people to basically press dot, enter amount, and select the recommended validators, but also they could select them manually because we wanted to take care of the advanced users who want to select their friends and basically known validators or customize them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, things getting changed, right? Yeah. Ecosystem evolves, right? And new constraint came in, right? Which is the minimum amount of the tokens to be staked.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is on Polkadot like 250 right now?
It's 450.
For minimum stake?
Yeah, for the minimum stake. Yeah.
Wait, is that minimum stake or that's minimum stake to earn?
It is minimum stake to earn rewards.
Yeah.
An eliminator.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And before that, I think it was the time when the minimum stake was something like 180. The Polkadot developers, Polkadot maintainers, they came up with a solution called nomination pools.
Yeah.
Which allow you to basically unite the stakes of the group entity and just start staking with a one dot, right? So those minimal staking conditions we are not applying to you as a participant of the nomination pools.
Yeah.
Right? So introducing just like two options for the new user Like, okay, you can stake as a nominator or you can stake as a nomination pool participant, creating the dualism, creating the options,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And users hate options.
Okay.
Right? Moreover, they hate to think, right?
Uh-huh.
They want to just achieve their goal with as less resistance as possible,
sure,
right? Because this is how our brain works. The more you think, the higher probability that you will basically end up not staking DOT.
Yeah, yeah.
Not buying DOT and not staking DOT.
So,
because
so
it's so complex.
How did you guys solve this?
Basically, it should be a no-brainer, right? To make it for the user. If you stake more than 500, and the 500 is actually an interesting way of calculating the minimal stake with some buffer, right? And the buffer allows you to basically start staking with a minimal amount with the validators,
yeah,
but also to receive rewards in a way that you will not be kicked off as a nominator,
yeah,
right? Because of the minimal amount will be, it's increasing daily, right? And if you started to stake with the 450 and tomorrow is 460, let's say, you're not receiving rewards. So we cannot just rely on the 450. We need to have some buffer so that users will receive the rewards and will be safe. If user enters more than that, then we after assign them to the validators and we after assign the recommended validators, because
you guys have a recommended set.
Yeah, based on what you said earlier.
It is not set. It is basically at the moment when user like clicks start staking.
Yeah.
The Nova fetching from the blockchain all validators and then selects the best in terms of profitability, reliability.
Okay.
They have identity, and then we just remove the clusters more than two. Right. So only two validators per
one. Okay, and so you have your own selection algorithm.
Yeah, it changed. Cool. If you enter less than 500, right, then the node will understand, okay, yeah, guy, you cannot go with the validators. It's too risky for you, or like it's not possible.
Yeah.
Then you will just go with the nomination pools, and by default, it's a no wallet pool. But again, you can go and switch the pool right there.
Okay. Yeah. And are you guys running your own nomination pool?
Yeah, we have a couple of them. We started...
You have a couple pools?
Yeah, just for the reserves.
Oh, wow.
The nomination pool is supported right now in the Polkadot, Kusama, and Aleph Zero.
Yeah.
So we had to start the nomination pools there.
Yeah.
Just one DOT is required. But at the same time, you basically have to claim the rewards by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you cannot participate in governance. So the huge chunk of you as a Polkadot citizen is basically cut it off.
I know, yeah.
Right? Whenever you stake directly, it's basically like you have an open opportunity to participate in the governance, to delegate, to vote. You basically can be this perfect Polkadot citizen in terms of like you stake the DOT tokens, which means that you increasing the safety of the whole network.
Yep, yeah.
But also you deciding the fate of the network in the governance, right?
Right.
So this is like, it's the best what you can do for the network, right?
It's beautiful. I love it.
It's beautiful, right?
Yeah. So this is a whole mobile flow for anybody to be, as you said, a perfect citizen of Polkadot.
Yeah.
It is really cool. Why did you guys decide to go the mobile route?
I think, first of all, personally, I believe that the feature is mobile.
Yeah.
Right? Even if you compare like the amount of the people who have access to the mobile phones, and who has access to the laptops or the computers, the mobile phones... much more popular.
It's like a factor of 10 different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we see that in our audience too. Like the majority of our audience watches all of our videos on mobile.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So here's that. Like the user base is bigger. I believe that it's more convenient, right? You can do it anywhere you go, right?
Yeah.
The second thing, we are the mobile engineering team, like from the get-go as a company, right? The third one is more like a technical, like, if you compare it with the browser extension is a limited environment, right? It's limited in terms of like a memory, limited in terms of like security and the privacy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
because you're basically building an app inside of the app, inside of the operation system, which has vulnerabilities, like the Windows, for example.
Yeah.
So you're multiplying the risks of vulnerabilities in the Windows by vulnerabilities in the Chrome, by the technology stack of the JavaScript, which is super, I think it's the most, like, not dangerous, but like a burnable language/tech stack, right? It's a high risk,
right?
Well, so
can we talk about security a bit? Because initially I was a little reluctant to go into Nova because in my head I'm thinking, well, my computer's at home behind a locked door. You know, I'm carrying my phone with me everywhere. You know, I'm leaving
what
it around.
What happens if somebody steals a phone?
What would you say about those security concerns with mobile?
First, if you take a look on the platform itself, like the iOS or Android, it has much less vulnerabilities comparing to the Windows, for example, and the Chrome and the, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? The second, you have much, much more control on the secrets, which are your key pair, inside of iOS and Android. You can literally...
Yeah, we'll get some beers.
Big ones.
You're like, talking about secrets, controlling secrets. Yeah,
controlling the secrets on the mobile, on the iOS and Android, you have much more control. You literally can say, like, I want to store my secret data in a place which is accessible only on my only by my application, right? So none of the other apps can even see or understand that there is something like that.
This is that trusted execution environment, right?
Yeah, in enclaved storage. Enclaved storage.
Enclaved storage
of the operation system of iOS and Android.
Yeah, it's where we store our passwords, our biometrics.
Yes,
right.
Yes. So you have much more control on that, right? Now, on top of this, as an app developer, you can assign layers of the security. For example, you cannot open Nova without the PIN code. We also added like more features that even if you unlocked your phone and pass it to your friend, you can set that you requiring the PIN code or the Face ID for each transaction before they committed.
Well, I feel like kind of what you're saying here, part of the reason why it's so secure is the mobile environment is a little bit more sandboxed, right? There's like more, there's a downside that to that too, which is, I think, the app stores, right? What can you say about the challenges of updating the mobile applications? I know there's also a lot of legal hoops that you have to jump through as well with crypto applications, especially on iOS.
It's fine. Now it's not an issue. It's an issue whenever you do it first, right? Because you basically can face a review for the 1 month. The big deal is to comply to the guidelines themselves. And it's a big thing for the, not for the Google Play, but for the App Store, because App Store is actually trying to come up with regulations for the crypto.
Yeah.
Comparing with the Google Play, they just don't care.
Okay.
But the App Store, they care a lot in terms of like they want to have a piece of pie. So whenever you do the purchase of the NFT, they see the market in it. So they want to have a commission.
Yeah.
Right?
30%.
So yeah, the 30%. The App Store has this like policies which are saying regarding like the NFTs, the cryptocurrency exchange, and I believe there are a couple of more, but those two are the primary one. Basically, they're saying that you cannot send the NFTs, send buy NFTs.
But they don't feel the same about fungible tokens?
They don't feel the same. And the cryptocurrency exchange is basically, if you want to provide the interface for the cryptocurrency exchange, that means that you have to have a license in the country in which your iOS application is distributed.
Wow.
Which means that imagine like we have like how many like
all over the
163
world,
countries in the App Store.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, please go ahead and submit the document for each of this country saying that your company has an access to provide a cryptocurrency exchange.
Wow.
And good luck with that, because not all of these 163 countries have the even like a cryptocurrency in the law. So it's basically it's unfulfillable requirement, let's say. Right, but it turns out that you can prove that you can do it in a Dex way. So if you provide the interface just for the blockchain, then you're good to go.
Right.
As soon as you are not someone like Binance, which is custodial, right? So you are not managing the swap itself or the funds of the users, then you're good to go.
Right.
So this is not a
issue. So this
issue
is why Nova
us.
Can connect to HydroDX and there's no
Hydro
problem
DX,
there.
It was a DApps. It was a pain for us to prove to the App Store that the DApps are not a competitor of the App Store, because they have a requirement that you cannot submit the competitor of the App Store to the App Store. And they were like triggered, like, you have this DApps. This is a competitor to the App Store. Remove it.
Right, right.
And we were like drawing these diagrams, explaining it. I had even a call with Apple's engineer.
Crazy.
Like, he was from the New York. I was back in Dubai. I was like, hey, here's how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like that. So yeah, it was the craziest thing. But here's a good thing. In the recent update of the iOS, which is, I think, 17 or 16, they basically allowed to do the sideloading, right? Or they're planning to do the side loading,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Which means that we will have a much better way, like Android folks, to side load the applications. It was possible for the iOS before, but the process was super cumbersome.
Okay.
Like staking the Polkadot without Nova.
Gotcha. Limo, day to day at Nova, mm-hmm. what sort of activities are they getting you to do?
Getting me to do?
Yeah.
A lot of Discord reading, just marketing stuff, and yeah. But these guys are like superheroes in terms of like development and design. Like
right.
all the chats, all day, every day, is how to improve the UX of the products, how to like implement those UX designs. It's really a great team to work for.
How do you guys decide what features to add? Because you guys have a bit of an interesting funding model where yeah. you present features you are going to build to the treasury and yeah. the treasury funds those. But how do you decide how you're going to expand the
yeah.
app? How do you ensure that you're not just like job creating, like you're not just creating features in order to receive funding?
Here's where our experience helped with the product development in the past,
yeah.
right? We can analyze and we can understand by interviewing or by seeing just like community what they really need, right? Based on that, we can come up with a roadmap. So to pinpoint the features that will specifically address the pain points of the users. This is like one thing which is coming from us, like as a product developers. The second thing is that we have an open gateway to which users are coming and saying like, hey, we loved your app, but can you please add this, right? And we call this community requested features. We have like a board where anyone can come, submit their feature request, vote on existing feature request, comment it. And we usually allocate up to 30% of our like 4-6 months grants, right, to
yeah.
these features. Mm. So it's pretty big. And the results are like, it's astonishing because like whenever this feature gets released, the person who
they're
submitted,
so
yeah, they're so happy. They're just like, wow. Yeah. The third one, we always keep into track of the industry,
yeah.
like the mobile wallets, like what's going on in the other ecosystem, like
yeah,
in the other
working.
Wallets,
yeah.
right? What they did for the battery UX, what they did in terms of the features. And this is like a wild west because we cannot just take everything what they develop and apply to the node. We have to first think like why they did it,
mm-hmm.
right, in what circumstances, environment,
yeah.
to not just copy paste, because this would be a bad product. You always need to align your product with your goals, with your quality attributes, because your product should have a voice. You
yeah.
cannot just like add everything like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah,
a lot
right
of the features,
yeah.
it's like the super simple staking, right?
Yeah.
It's like you go in the community, people are confused about staking, why is this product this much
yeah.
for staking? So it was it becomes very clear that we need
yeah.
to make good UX for that. It's same as the swaps that were
yeah.
at the
yeah.
feature. Right now, there's different DEXs. It's cumbersome for people to actually like XCM transfer stuff,
yeah.
right? So
yeah,
making
yeah.
some products yeah. where in Nova you can select yeah. whatever token you want and swap it to another token, and we do it by XCM for everybody.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It, in one press.
It's interesting. So one thing I wanted to get to today was the history of Nova. Every once in a while, it's a point of contention. I know that Nova actually spun out from Soramitsu,
yeah.
right? And that whole project there.
Yeah,
Fearless
yeah.
Wallet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You want
yeah.
to take some time to clear
yeah.
up that story for people?
Sure.
Yeah.
Basically, when the Kusama started,
yeah.
right? The couple of community members from the Polkadot came to us as
yeah.
a team
mm-hmm.
and said like, hey, can you build the wallet? Because we saw the efforts of your team. And back then we were building the wallets for like Ethereum and for other blockchains. And
oh.
they basically saw it. Experience of the team which I was managing, right?
So you were building mobile wallets before?
Yeah,
what
of course.
Was that team called, or what was that company called?
The company was called Soramitsu.
Oh,
and
okay.
before I was working in like
a, I mean,
biggest
yeah.
companies basically for the telecom, for the banks. So,
ah,
yeah.
okay, gotcha.
Yeah, basically that happened. So we started to analyze, I started to learn about the Polkadot ecosystem, and it was pretty good journey. So we are basically a team inside of the company, fully self-organized. I would say that it was a little bit pain because our resources, like my teammates, were constantly dragged to other projects, right?
Okay.
Which we were not huge a fan of.
Yeah,
by
yeah,
that
yeah.
time, I was managing, I think, 4 or 5 projects inside of the company. And at some point, I came and say like, hey, this cannot go anymore. I want to work only on this mobile app, which was the Fearless, right? So my team started to work only on the Fearless wallet, right? And we've been responsible for everything, for getting the proposal done. We've been like a company inside of the company.
There was a sense of ownership over the application as well.
Yeah, and the community always seen like me and my teams responsible for it. It was never like something what we've been receiving from the company in terms of like helping to do some stuff.
Okay.
Right. It was kind of like not the best thing to have.
So what led to the split?
There was one centralized exchange which came to the Soramitsu saying like, okay, we want to buy Fearless. We want to acquire the Fearless team and the product. How we can do this? And they contacted me because I was the person like for the project, face of the project.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, you know, we kind of like a web-free product. I cannot see the future where the centralized exchange will acquire us. And they were like, oh, no, don't worry. We will do it, everything like, it will be super cool. You will be like a web-free part of our new like a product line, mm-hmm. right? So we're going to have this web-free products in our like a portfolio.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm still not really want to do this, but I will pass it to the CEO. Mm. So I have passed to the CEO with intent that, hey, you see these guys basically, yeah, probably that we were going to reject it. And they were like, no, let's consider it. And then the negotiation period started for like 3 months or so with this centralized exchange. I was not a part of direct communications, but I was receiving like, let's say, requirements from my team, what we want to have if this will happen.
Right.
Like salaries, relocations, that stuff,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
And it was not... It was a US company, so it was some kind of like relocation package, right, involved.
Wow.
So yeah, it was happening for 3 months, and then basically closer to September, the Soramitsu management came to me and saying like, the deal is off because we couldn't agree with them. But we still want to migrate you and the guys to a separate entity because we want to move all the DeFi and Web3 projects out of the Soramitsu. Because we want to work with the central banks and they got triggered whenever we have something like a DeFi oriented or something, right?
I see.
From the legal perspective.
Yeah, I see.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you will study this right now in their portfolio, you will see it. They created like separate entities on which they onboarded their projects, DeFi and all that stuff oriented.
Sure, sure.
That was happened and I was like, well, it was pain because I was requiring my team to grow. Because we wanted to grow, we wanted to build more. And it was always restrictions, constraints to not giving like salary increases for my team, to not giving me more developers, and always dragging my people to other projects, which was a pain. My co-founders, Valentin and Ruslan, they messaged me that we got kicked. Like our GitHub access is more. Like we got kicked from the working chats.
Oh.
And I was like, whoa, what's going on? And then I was kicked as well. And we were like, what happened? Because that day we also informed my team, like we were a team of 8, but only 3 of us, me, Valentin, and Ruslan, we knew like how negotiation goes and whatsoever. And on that day we basically told it, okay, we're going to transit to a new company, the salaries will be that. So we discussed everyone was super hyped, right? So yeah, it's like a new beginning, we will have more freedom, we have more resources.
Mm.
And then this happens, all of a sudden. And I messaged the Camille, who is the CEO of the Russian office in Soramitsu, and he was like, I don't know what's happening. Like, okay. it's just Makoto changed his mind and didn't tell anyone. Everybody is shocked. And everybody means like the CEO, C-management of the Soramitsu. And it was like a situation when we don't understand anything, right? Nobody in the Soramitsu understand anything, and there's just like Makoto saying like, some weird stuff now because it's like 180 degrees change decision.
It's pure chaos.
Yeah, pure chaos. And
okay.
It happened that Camille and Makoto were in the same area. So Camille went to his place to discuss like what's going on. And they talked for like 4 hours or something. And it was agreed and committed that it was emotional decision. It was not specified what happened. So until that day, like today, I don't know what happened. Like why it was like that.
Hmm.
Nobody told us.
All right.
And it was not told to Camille, or maybe it was told, but it's secretly. So we don't know what happened, really. behind the scenes.
Somehow, you picked up the team. I guess, basically forked Fearless into Nova.
We have not forked. We created the Rippers from scratch, basically, because we were...
But you rebuilt what you had. You didn't start from scratch.
We used the code that we single-handedly wrote in the Soramids, which was open source Apache Second License, funded by Treasury, and we just continued to work in this case.
Well, that's kind of the remarkable thing about this story, is that in the end, you were able to pick it back up through Treasury funding.
Because
Token holders supported you guys going out by yourself, right?
The guys with the team that were building Fearless, right?
Right.
It's the same team, right?
Yeah.
They just migrated to a new company because of the issues that Anton mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm. And everybody knew this, so that's probably why we got the support, and I appreciate a lot the whole ecosystem.
On top of all that, you guys have recently expanded the scope of what you're building. This is the Nova Spectre project, which is a desktop-based wallet.
Yeah.
This is particularly aimed at kind of enterprise
power users and also
DAOs
individuals. So the proposal we just got passed adds a lot of features that like individual people would like cross-chain transfers and wallet connect. Because right now you need to use Polkadot Vault, which is amazing. Like, I think it's the best hardware wallet for Polkadot. It doesn't have the issues that Ledger has.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have not yet got Polkadot Vault, right? So now you can connect to Spectre with Wallet Connect. So for example, Nova Wallet has Wallet Connect built in. Hopefully more wallets in Polkadot support soon. So you can craft the transaction in Spectre and sign it from Nova Wallet or any other Wallet Connect wallet. Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. I was kind of surprised that you guys went this direction, though.
Yeah.
Like, what information did you get that spurred you to actually develop a whole desktop wallet, which we don't see very often? The last desktop wallet I used was like a Bitcoin. It's like really, I don't know, it's called like Electrum or something like that. Like,
oh yeah, Electrum. You know what I, yeah, of course. Yeah. Electrum is a rock solid one.
Yeah.
It was
OG one.
It was
interesting. Yeah, I used like a NES controller actually to like, I'm kidding. It just seems out. What information did you get that spurred you guys to build this?
Basically, when we started our transition, right? I mentioned that a lot of people started to support us. Like, they understood the situation, right? What happened, right? And they were like, we want to help you, right? Have you considered building this, and that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were, like, trying to understand the new market for us as a company to, like, jump in, right? Because back then, there were three issues for the big entities, like enterprise, VCs, investors. Before joining the Polkadot, they saw the main obstacles in DeFi liquidity.
Yeah.
So you cannot easily swap, let's say, 200,000 worth of DOTs to the stablecoins, right? For some reason, or even more. Mm-hmm. The second, the hardware wallets are bad. Like, the Ledger has limited amount of the operations that it can sign.
Yeah.
The parity signer is completely unknown. And the third one is multisig. Because multisig was only available through the Polkadot JS, and it's like, oh yeah, let's go. And like pass this call data.
It's so cumbersome. It's like awful UX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you know.
You need a really committed team to sign anything. Yeah.
Me and my team have started to research. Like, we have a huge document, which basically in a software development called software requirement specification. Hmm. And it basically describes what we are going to build. And what we're going to build is mainly the desktop application, which first will have priorities for the enterprise users, like multisigs, proxies, blah, blah, blah. But eventually, it will become the main gateway for the Polkadot for everyone, right? So right now, we have this thing that Polkadot JS is the face of the ecosystem. Not the extension, but the application, right? It's main portal for the ecosystem. You can go there, you can connect to any parachain, you can do any operation, but it has a technical interface. It's a wonderful tool for the development, for the developers, but it's a bad tool to be the representation of the Polkadot as a product for the newbies.
Yeah, for the average user, it's
for the
way too technical.
And we want to build something that exists in the other ecosystems, which is a thing. Like, there are a couple of desktop wallets which are super cool, right? And we want to build the desktop app, which leverages the advantages of the Polkadot, for example, the Lite clients. Just like imagine you have the desktop app, which also running the blockchain nodes, and you're independent on like infrastructure, and you can just bootstrap your app, and you have Lite clients, and you can send the operations directly to the blockchain without being censored, right? Completely like in a private environment. This is super cool. So there are so many things in the Polkadot which now unlocked for us because we are now in a desktop environment. We are not on a mobile, so we now can do something like a complex, like a multisig, like a proxy management, like enterprise management, like a funds, reports, all of that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But we're still on a desktop. Remember what I said like earlier, Windows, JavaScript.
That's what I'm thinking,
yeah. This
is
super vulnerable tools,
exactly, right?
Exactly, right. So that's why Spectre never holds your key. You connect either for the wallet connect or the hardware wallet or anything, right? But the Spectre itself will never store the keys because it's dangerous.
But it's important to note, like, this Spectre right now, like the original version, it's laying this like foundation of security in mind, yeah. Like Anton said about light clients. In Ethereum space, for example, everybody uses MetaMask, right? Mm-hmm. Their RPC provider, like, will censor certain decks,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We probably won't say what they are, but there is this censorship that gets built in if they get pressure from whoever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Lite clients is like unstoppable. You cannot censor which dApps you can connect to, which is what Web3 should be, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like self-sovereign stuff. You should be able to do what you want, right?
Yeah.
Which is why it's why Spectre is built with that in mind, because you shouldn't be censoring people.
Yeah.
So and now we're adding more features on top of it to make it more like feature rich, right?
Imagine what I have talked for the Nova, now it will be transferred to the Spectre,
yeah.
And then more and more features, like it will be super rich application.
Top feature on the way.
So like I said earlier, right now there's a problem with like end users where they might have DOT and they want ASTAR, right? So there's multiple DEXs where you could facilitate that swap, right? But people don't know what the best slippage is, the highest like liquidity, the lowest fees for like XCM, for example.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So making a product that will take all that away from decision making, like Anton said before,
yeah.
The more decisions you've got to make, it's like, I'm not going to be bothered doing that because it's too much. If it's just literally DOT into ASTAR,
right,
and then the app just routes you through the best swap for you.
Okay.
It's,
you're going to become a router.
It's amazing. Proxy stuff is, obviously, I'm helping like Blinkin with you guys. Like, that first Spectre is going to be amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's like so many great account management setups that you can have that will be super easy for you, Spectre.
Okay, so that's two. You're going to become a router for swaps and
ultimate
proxies.
Account management
ultimate
setup.
Account.
Yeah.
All right. Anton?
Yeah, what? I will just say something simple, but which is really missing in the ecosystem right now, which is the push notifications.
Yeah.
It's been on our table for a while.
Yeah.
But now we have more and more amazing things to notify the user, like the governance, the staking, the transfers.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of that will be available in Nova Wallet, right? So whenever there is a new referendum, you can sign up or subscribe for the push notifications for the referendum. Like, referendum changes status, you receive the push notifications.
I was
first.
Just going to say, I would love that. I would like to like flag a ref that I'm watching, and then when it flips, like
exactly.
10% or something like that, I want to see.
The referendum, the staking reports every week. Like,
that's cool.
Hey, you
yeah,
earn
yeah.
this much. Whenever you receive the transfer, you have a push notifications. So.
Nova's legit. The whole team is legit.
Yeah.
And it's no small task what you're doing. Polkadot is this big, beautiful ecosystem with so many possibilities, but without an interface to interact with it, it's really nothing. There are no users. There are no people participating in governance. There are no people securing the network.
It's like you when you were at Toronto Pizza there. And
You
see all the people that were here in like 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
And they're like using Polkadot.js.
Yeah.
And you're telling them about Polkadot and like, oh, that's terrible UX. It's like just for devs. And then you showed Nova Wallet off and they're like, oh, this is actually really good. Like,
yeah, it was cool.
It's, we need these good UX products, be that wallets, be that dApps like HDX Omnipool or Interlay or ASTAR portal that are just super easy to use. If it's too cumbersome, if it's like too techy, we're gonna not get the mass adoption that we need, and that's where we kind of come in to hopefully make it perfect to do all the operations people want to do.
It's beautiful. Well, guys, thanks very much for sitting down with me today. Long time coming, getting you guys on the show. But it's great to hear your story, and we'll keep watching development as we go. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jake.